Joining me in studio, Kerry Henderson from the transgender support group Affirm NI with her wife, Lexi. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon.
Kerry, what's it? I imagine it could be really quite emotional maybe listening to that today. What are you thinking listening to that, that young kid?
Personally, I'm very happy for Paul that he's got his mum's support. Mm-hmm. And that's a really big thing when you're a young child and you know, tell your mum something serious as this. Mm-hmm. My own self, I think that Angela's a great mum. She listened to him. She didn't judge him. And she said, you know, of course kids are getting to know themselves and, you know, their sexuality, their gender identity, two different things. Mm-hmm. But it's a great, you know, hallmark for Northern Irish society that there is people out there who are willing to listen to their kids.
Lexi, do you feel any differently listening to that piece?
I think they very much mirrored my own story in the way I felt as well. So, you know, I was very much on par with what I was saying, you know, so yeah. That's pretty much.
Kerry, help us out here, and do forgive me if I get something wrong here, because I think for an awful lot of people, this is a new conversation. Would you agree with me that your stories have always been there, probably in human history, but for an awful lot of people, it's a conversation maybe they've never had with another human being. Do you sense that times are changing?
Most definitely, Paul. Mark, sorry. yeah, because about 20, 30 years ago, there was, you know, trans people were out, but there was no mention of media. Mm-hmm. Like nowadays, we have got, you know, TV programs, we've got, you know, films, we've got even stories written by trans children for other trans children. Mm-hmm. So the word is getting out there by trans kids and adults, and it's getting more accepting because of that.
And I believe you were brought up in a kind of conservative community.
Definitely, very much. My parents are very conservative from the northwest of Ireland, so.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? What was childhood like for you, Kerry?
Confusing for a start. Like Paul, I was, you know, crying myself asleep and praying to the person upstairs, you know, make me a girl. But all the time it was like, you know, if I wanted to come out to my parents, which I really did want to at about 11, when I found out how different I was, because mm-hmm. I was reading a lot, like researching, but there's no internet at that time.
So help me, you weren't or aren't gay.
No, I'm identified as a lesbian.
Yes.
So I'm a lesbian female.
Right. How unusual is it for two people with your circumstances, not just to have those circumstances, but to meet up as partners, Lexi? It must be very unusual.
It's actually not that unusual.
Isn't it?
We kind of gravitate to each other, and our support networks and support groups and everything else, we all come together, so it's where we socialise, so it's quite
So do you identify, then obviously as lesbian?
I'm actually bisexual.
Gotcha. It must be very difficult to even knock at the door of life if you feel isolated from such an early age in your school, in your politics and everything.
For me, I was in secondary school when I, you know, told people. But I really wanted to tell my English teacher, who was an ally. But unfortunately, she became unwell. So she had to take leave and eventually retired. Mm-hmm. But after school, I moved to Sligo Town and I found myself. Who I was as a person, my sexuality, and I decided, you know, okay, I'm going to get transition, I'm going to start transitioning, even without my parents' consent, I need to do this. And then I was waiting a while for the referral to the Dublin clinic.
Yes.
And that came within weeks before I moved to Derry. I got so tired of waiting for the referral, decided to move to Derry.
I do apologise, by the way, with whatever it is the weather today, we might be in and out off and on air. We can't do anything about that, and our engineers are looking at that as we speak. It's an important conversation, Kerry, and I do apologise.
That's okay.
For that. What for you was the enabling factor to take your stand as a very young person? I mean, you were quite young then when you decided, no, I'm changing.
I was 21 when I decided, you know, to transition.
Yes.
But I didn't actually officially transition until I was 25.
Right. But that's still pretty young, you know?
Yeah.
And life... Goodness me. Was it easier in England, Lexi?
It certainly wasn't for me.
By way of attitudes?
No, I actually
We tend
don't
to think
so.
Of England as being a bit more liberal than over here, you know?
Where I grew up again, it was a very conservative family, and my dad was very strict and traditional, and he didn't know anything about this, and he certainly didn't agree with me, you mm-hmm. know, basically. But there was somebody else who was transgender in the same street, and I'd seen what they was going through, and that prevented me from... you know, coming out and saying to people, this is me. Although I did come out when I was 7 years of age. Mm-hmm.
So, did you know from your seven?
I knew from when I was younger that there was something, you know, not right with me. I mean, I was sitting in the bath and you know, it was like a piece of cotton to me. It was like, what's this? It shouldn't be
Why
there,
have I got
know?
This?
Yeah, and right. It was like tearing a piece of cotton off the bottom of your clothing, you know, it just shouldn't be there, you know.
Right.
And
I can't imagine what that's like when you're looking at your own body. It'd be like me looking at you know, this arm or something, or this, and thinking, you know, it doesn't belong to me. It must be very, very difficult.
Imagine being trapped inside yourself, a prison. You cannot get out of it, and it's like there's somebody else in there trying to claw their way out of your skin, mm-hmm. and you've got that, but it's going on in your head, and to just let me out, let me out, let me out, and it's constant, and it's pretty much what it's like. It's just, it's a prison sentence.
Did you know from your number two, Kerry? Aye?
Sorry?
Did you know as a very young kid,
similarly? I knew I was different at six, but I didn't know how different until I was 11. Because
yes.
As I said, I researched it and read books. I got books from the library because, you know, my parents kept a very basic library and it was just classic literature and stuff like that. But I needed to get it, so I studied medical journals. And so then when I saw the word transgender,
yes,
I just, okay, what does that mean? I looked up in the dictionary and it was just a basic definition.
And the teacher got sick, you said. Who was the first person you decided to speak to?
It was actually my best friend at school.
Right.
And she was very supportive.
She was receptive, right.
Yeah, but initially she thought that it was like, oh, it's a phase. But over the years she's come to realise it wasn't a phase, you know, and it's... We're closer now than we were at school, funnily enough.
There you go.
So
She stood by you throughout the years.
Yeah.
Because it seems to me that so many difficulties. And then to say nothing, Lexi, of the mental stress, not just going through this physically, but having relationships change or rejection in life, probably more than most other sets of circumstances people listen to this. The mental duress is probably as bad as anything else, is it?
It is. It's really overwhelming. You know, I know personally I've suffered, and I still suffer with mental health issues, you know, to this day. And no doubt I will till the day I die. It's just a part of it. But luckily it's getting easier for the young ones today. It's easier for them to come out because of the older generation, even before us, that's paved that way, you know. And we just pick up the banner and carry on, you know, and hopefully that makes it easier for the 7-8-year-olds to actually say, hang on a minute, you know, okay. Stand up.
You see, there'll be a lot of people that will have listened to that Nolan interview today. I assume you've both gone through surgery. I do make that assumption, yeah?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
That there was a little kid, you know, fella or girl, that it's such a huge decision to be available, Kerry, to a little kid of such an impressionable age. Maybe puberty would change things again. I mean, do people to and fro in life? What would you say to help people listening to this, to help them understand why surgery should even be an option for a little child?
Personally, I can't really answer that.
Right.
But I would say just listen to your child. Listen to what they want. If they say they want surgery, you know, give them that option. And be supportive, which, you know, it's adamant, you know, that's what I have to say. Like,
what do you think of that, Lexi?
I think it's about the parents having trust and the child having trust in the health professionals and those that know what they're doing. You know, there is a dedicated plan out there and a process, and I think that just needs to be followed to the letter.
I say I'm not a parent. I don't know. You guys parents know?
Yeah.
I'm
not a parent. I wouldn't have a clue if my child said that, because part of me will be thinking, you might change when you're 16. You might change... but maybe that's just a conservative way of dealing with it. Do you know what I mean? That life can pendulum. And
but the thing is, Mark, there is, you know, hormone blockers now for, you know, to block puberty, mm-hmm. and you know they are reversible. So if the child decides this is not for them, they can go off them and then have a normal puberty they're assigned.
But do you meet people in your community who look back on their surgery, and think it was that maybe they shouldn't have surgery, or does that never happen, Alexa?
It does happen, but it's more the quality of the surgery than the regret of having the surgery. I know quite a few people that it's like it's not lived up to their expectation. You know, so that's where the problem mostly lies.
In terms of genital function,
yes,
and sexual function.
Yeah. You know, as the surgery's taken place, they've not had, you know, sensitivity or different things.
Because I imagine, and we're not for one second asking about your medical procedures in terms of the people who did it, but I imagine if there's prejudice in society, you're going to probably have medical people who don't understand it and aren't sympathetic to it as well, Lexi, and your tittering.
Absolutely, all the time, right from when you walk into the GP surgery, you know, all the way through to surgery itself. But you're constantly having to prove yourself and jump through circles, you know. It's like, how do you know, how do you know, how do you feel, you know, and all these things. The amount of ignorance, especially from GPs and even hospitals, is unbelievable.
Do you understand, Kerry, why they would be ignorant?
Again, I'd say it's probably religion. You know,
a lot of religious influences.
And, you know, before, you know, the modern world came into being, you could say, you know, being gay was a sin, being trans is a sin.
But I don't think that, you know, gay issues are touched on in the holy books of most of the main religions. I can't. I would have studied this thing at one stage in my life, Gary. Is there any transgender analysis or moments in, say, the Judeo-Christian story? I can't seem to think.
There isn't as such, but in Eastern religions there is, you know, touches of it. Like myself, I am Hindu, and Krishna came to Earth, to Arjuna, first as a woman, and then as his true self, to test Arjuna. So, because at the time, Indian men, and, you know, a kind of really part of the world, they're very... what's the word I'm trying to think of?
So you're saying Krishna transitioned?
No.
No.
He's an avatar of Vishnu.
Okay.
And Brahma. So it's kind of... He appeared to test Arjuna.
And what is that? What is Arjuna? I don't know.
The prophet. Okay. The Hindu prophet. So he's spreading the word about Hinduism.
And do you find comfort in Hinduism?
Being honest, I haven't really practiced it in a while.
Right.
But I did find it during my transition, later stages of my transition.
Because, I mean, you confided some things in our team, and religious stuff played a big part in your youth. You could be forgiven for turning your back on all sorts of sort of religious form, couldn't you?
My mum was, you know, very old-fashioned Catholic, but very loving parent. My father was a very conservative Protestant, and still is. But
what a story you have, you know. Friend. You have. So there was some mixed marriage there as well. It's you know, all the Protestant stuff and the Catholic stuff going on too.
Yeah.
Boy.
But the thing is, though, it's just, you know, the Christian religion, it's, you know, it's about love and Christ and, you know, Jesus' love.
Well, there's plenty of stuff in there which is not too forgiving of gay practice and stuff. Maybe people can play verse tennis all day.
Most of the Old Testament, you know, and it's a lot of the New Testament is very much supportive of love, no matter who or, you know, who you fancy or whatever.
Circumstances. What about you, Lexi? Are you left with religious identity?
Not really. I mean, I was Catholic, but I don't see myself as Catholic anymore. I was kind of cast out, you know, so it's... But other than that, no, it does nothing for me.
You feel cast out? It's an interesting way of putting it. Yeah. Do you feel a cold shoulder in chapel?
And not so much here, but...
not so much here?
Not so much here.
Because we sometimes think ourselves the most conservative bastion in Western Europe, you know what
well,
I mean?
Initially I'm from Portadown, so, you know, it was a bit more...
your mum was in Portadown?
No, I was in Portadown, you know, so...
Okay. You're in Portadown. Well, there you go. I'm a Lurgan man myself, so I know that part of the world well. Listen, Kerry, there'll be parents today, because I think... it's one of those debates that I sense is changing. It's like the gay marriage issue last year south of the border. You just sense, socially something very interesting is happening here. And that Nolan interview will be very, very widely heard and widely understood, I think, by a lot of people who maybe previously just thought, no, this is an absolute no-no, you don't do this. Where would you like us to take the debate? Where would you take listeners today?
I'd just like to get them to take that, you know, each person, each boy or girl who identifies as a boy or a girl, take down the word. And as I said before, listen to them. And also, you know, be supportive and have support for parents as well. Because it's not easy, you know, for the parent as well. Because they feel, they go through a stage of mourning.
Of course.
You know, they're losing what they see or they saw as their, you know...
Perfect little boy, perfect little girl.
Yeah. But in reality, they haven't lost a child. The child is still there. You know, it's just they're trying to be true to themselves.
What would you say to parents who have... I mean, parents know their kids. I mean, Stephen made that point in the interview. And parents will know when stuff is up in the deep heart of the child. I would have thought many, many cases. Maybe not in your case, maybe so. But what would you say to parents who just say, oh, I can't, I'm just putting it on the long finger. We'll deal with this when they go through their teens. We'll, you know, let them get through adolescence and we'll discuss this. I mean, just pushing it down the road, you know what I mean, Kerry?
Yeah, I do. But I would say, you know, just research it, you know. Do what your child did, research it. And there is support out there locally and, you know, nationally as well, so.
Anything to add to that, Lexi?
For me, I want parents to realise that 59% of children under the age of 26 contemplate suicide. These are children who have gender identity issues. And 40% of those have attempted suicide. You know, those figures are tremendous, and don't let that be your child.
I'm assuming you guys know people who have taken that option, taken that decision in life,
yeah, you know, I attempted suicide myself a number of occasions.
Did you indeed?
You know, it was... There was no way out for me. That I, you know, I felt trapped. And again, with society out there, you constantly, you know, it's hard to get work. It's hard to be accepted. It's hard even walking down the street without getting bullied.
You beat me to it. What about walking down the street? You guys walk, leave here, go down the street. Are you thinking about every set of eyes up and down the street, Lexi, or what's it like?
Less so now. But you know, when you're first coming out and stuff, and you're first starting your transition, and you have to go out and live as the person that you want to be and the gender that you want to be, and you maybe still have facial hair or not, or you know, waiting for different kinds of surgeries. You know,
but Kerry, I think part of that is about the certainty with which people need it. Spooks people, especially when you are transitioning physically, moving from male to female, and people look maybe and go, I don't know, is that person a woman or is that person a man? And I think that spooks people, Kerry.
It does, but at the same time, you know, it's just, you ask somebody, even if you don't know them, you ask them, how do you want me to address you? Mm-hmm. And it's just been mannerly. It's, you know, and if they say, oh, I want to be addressed as a female, use she, her pronouns. Mm-hmm. Do that, you know. Again, it's respect for that person. You're not being forward. You're asking how they want to be identified, you know.
And life for you, you guys are married. But I was just asking before we came on there. Northern Ireland doesn't officially let you have the term marriage, Kerry, isn't
that? No, right? That's right. Yeah. We're civil partners. Mm-hmm.
But would you marry if you could?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
See, maybe that's the next thing that'll come up in the ranks of power. I don't know. What about life then now and finding a life for yourselves and a place and a home and a street and a community? Does that get better with age? Do you learn the tricks? Do you
learn to settle down. Yeah. You know? Like, first couple of years here, when I moved up here, I moved about 3-4 times in 5 years. And the longest place I was living was 5 years.
Because, did you ever get grief in community? Windows?
No hassle, okay. Thankfully. But just a couple of verbal words when I was walking down the street. But nothing in the last 6 years, I'd say.
Because you two would probably just wreck the place if you could. You'd probably break everybody's windows, Lex. You present as such violent people. You know what I mean? Isn't it funny? You know, I think when you have these conversations, you meet people, you're going, what on earth are people... You know, why would people hurt you? Why would people...
I went through 3 years and it was in Portadown. I was actually assisted to move over here because I was had my windows broken every day. My doors was being kicked in. They set fire to my oil tank. They put a bomb basically in my wheelie bin and blew up at the front of the house. It was just unreal. And the police was practically living at my house. You know, there was... on guard at the car at the front of the house and things like that.
Do all the police even... It's like every step of life. Did the police understand you?
Some do, some don't. Okay. It depends. It's more the community liaison officers would have more of an idea, but, you know, you get some of the other officers, although it's getting better. But
you've to live your life, or you've lived your life thinking, right, does the shopkeeper going to give me grief? Does the cop give me grief? Does the doctor, you know, be a bit snooty about it? And every encounter in life, nearly.
We become immune to it. We expect it. So we have a set of tools prepared and ready for it.
I have a mate, and I would never identify him, but he never could read, but he gets through life and he has all these little tricks that he never is forced to read anything. Oh, you know, I can't see that, you know. And I'm assuming these little life skills become necessary.
It doesn't wait, and we get absolutely fantastic at being able to avoid a situation as well. You know, we can, oh, there's a corner, let's disappear down it. We're good at not being seen if we don't need to be seen, you know.
Which is clever, but it's not fair. It's not fair. Kerry, just on a final note, groups like yours, Affirm NI, are there for families who maybe need to ask serious questions here or need to confide or be informed.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, families, how to get in touch with you or how to do that?
Well, we have a website, www.affirmni.co.uk, and our email address is info@affirmni.co.uk, or if you want to call us, 075. Sorry.
Is this a personal mobile, by the way? We wouldn't give out a personal mobile in any circumstances, but we'll go for the online care.
Okay, yeah, just the website and email address.
Okay, well, good on you, and we're happy to pass that on to any listeners who want to phone this program.
Did you say there's other sites out there, especially Gender Jam,
Gender Jam, Ireland,
and Sail NI? They're more for youth orientated.
Yes,
especially Sail, they would help children and families and stuff.
We've heard
like
from Sail today.
Yeah.
Thank you both. Thank you both for popping in. It's been a most educational conversation. I have to speak personally speaking anyway. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's the thoughts and the life experience of Kerry and Lexi.